before disappearing behind some thick trunks. Harm ignored the gesture and spied the other Cree already on his feet and crutches.
Fine morning, good goal.
You Jiberians call everyone good.
It's a fashion I've taken after the Sunjans. Are you buying us breakfast this morning?
Why not? Gol grumped, buying everything else for us. No reason to stop now.
My friend, good goal,
Harm beamed, getting to his feet. He placed his hands behind his back and stretched it with a crack.
That didn't sound good,
one of the nearby coach guards commented.
Sounds terrible, but feels good. Now for that breakfast.
You're welcome to eat with us.
The driver walked towards the vehicle.
Not much, but I can spare you a bit.
Both pit fighters nodded their approval before moving closer.
A little later, the rays of sunshine piercing the overhead canopy of green, they sat in a circle around an uncovered basket full of breads and hard-boiled eggs.
Sweet red jam was applied with knives and eaten with gusto. They drank water from a barrel at the rear of the coach, measured out with a deep ladle.
How was the alehouse last night?
Mullock asked from where he sat, the corner of his mouth flecked with the remains of his single egg.
Harm grunted.
What was that?
Yes,
Goal asked dryly.
What was that?
I said.
Harm swallowed his last bite of bread.
I almost had a fight.
The Jiberian then recounted his experience in the alehouse, and the words exchanged with the old man and his two dangerous-looking companions.
A damn good thing you didn't fight them,
Goal scolded. You're to fight later this week, and I'm counting on you to win. Anything between now and then? Well, you walk away. Run, if you have to.
Harm shrugged at this as if it were no matter.
I'm serious about this.
Goal continued. You risk yourself in such a manner, and you're no use to any of this.
What can you contribute?
My stories of distant lands?
Harm beamed.
The women I've bedded, the company I've kept.
That might be something to hear.
Mullock chuckled. Goal shot a dark look at his fellow countryman and pointed a warning finger at Harm.
All right,
the Jiberian conceded before Goal could say anything more.
I'll do as you say.
That placated the Cree as he settled back with only a hard look at his portly companion.
Right. So where's this Thymondas?
Mullock asked of the driver. The man, a middle-aged sort, with a face darkened by the sun, jabbed a hand in the direction of the lake.
Down there. You'll see a palisade, and a wharf with some small fishing boats. All his property. He's like a small lord here.
You know about him?
Goal asked.
Only that he used to train fighters for the games, and now lives here.
What's he look like?
Mullock wanted to know.
Small man. Old now. Haven't seen him for a while, but I've heard he's become sickly. His mind addled.
From where he sat, Harm's face drooped.
Is usually walked around by a pair of his lads.
The driver focused on Goal.
Two big men. You'll see them soon enough.
Harm drew a hand across his forehead. Even in the shade he was finding it uncomfortable. Goal noticed immediately.
Those men you almost fought.
Might be them.
Harm's words caused the Cree to close his eyes, seemingly wishing it wasn't so.
We could be finished then.
Mullock said for them both.
Shut up,
Goal snapped, flustered. Then to Harm.
We could be finished, you realize.
It might not be them,
Harm offered.
Might not,
Mullock added.
Are you some damn echo here?
Goal slung at his fellow Cree, who became sullen and set his jaw.
These two men, one of them walk around bare-chested like myself. Tall men?
Harm asked the driver.
Aye, that. I've seen him such.
Goal squeezed his eyes shut in quiet agony, while Mullock rubbed the side of his face.
I didn't know,
Harm muttered at them both.
There was no way of knowing. They were right on me from the moment I was in the place.
What should we do? Mullock asked.
Find out if it's really them,
Goal answered, setting his shoulders. Then go from there. My thanks for the meal. We'll be back before noon if we can, or send word otherwise.
If we're able. We'll be here then.
The driver stood up to tend to the horses. The three gladiators got to their feet and followed the dirt road. They passed houses built on either side without any forethought, other than simply claiming the spot as their own.
Small gardens with wild garlic divided up the space between the rough dwellings, while stone chimneys smoked idyllic plumes into the quiet morning air. The sun hid itself behind some low-hanging clouds, giving the land and the lake a pleasant, dull quality.
"Nice little place,"
Mullock eyed the free chickens strutting about. Goats could be heard somewhere to the left.
"Nothing here to do,"
Harm said. "Dare say this is just the start of a little town." Gull swung along on his crutches. "The lake ahead is quite large. Plenty of land about.
Quiet.
I'd like to see this place again in 20 years. Harm scowled, struggling with both his like and his loathing for the quiet life, and the idea that he might have made an enemy of Thymundus without even knowing made all other thoughts trivial. It was a wonder he managed to get down breakfast. They approached the lake, a great dark blue thing, laid out before them like a poorly framed mirror with a small rocky beach. A small wharf jutted out into the water, long and set low to the surface, with 3 small boats tied to its length. The town had been built alongside the small waterside clearing, but to the left and right, a fence of elms almost completely ringed the rest of the water's edges.
"Like one big pisspot,"
Mullock commented. "Doubt the people around here would call it that," Gull said without humour.
"Why? It's true.
It does look like a big pisspot,
even with the wharf and boats," Harm added.
"Or shitepot,"
said Mullock.
"They wouldn't shite or piss in their drinking water," Harm retorted. "What fool does that?"
"Look," Gull grated, "let me do the talking when we're inside. Don't say anything unless spoken to. Make no comments about anything. Just silence."
"Sounds to me he doesn't feel we're up on our social skills,"
Mullock said. Harm didn't bother answering as he was vigorously scratching at his crotch. To the left of the lake, narrow logs almost the height of 2 men rose up from the bare earth where they'd been rooted. The tops were sharpened to raw points while dull metal spikes protruded from the wall. They walked towards the large wooden gate set into the barrier and could see a tile roof rising up a ways beyond, smoke slinking from a chimney.
"Someone's home, anyway,"
Mullock said.
"Rap on the wood,"
Gull instructed. The Cree looked about a moment before pounding 3 times on the gate, not moving the timbers in the slightest.
"Good morning,"
Mullock called out, causing Gull to squint. No answer from beyond.
"What now?"
Mullock asked.
"We wait."
Harm's unease grew as his gut squirmed, seemingly rearranging his insides. A man could be heard humming to himself then, drawing closer to the gate. 2 others could be heard talking and chuckling. Then came the sound of boots climbing steps, and a head peered over the wall.
"What is it?"
the head asked.
"Is this the residence of Thymundus?"
Gull asked, craning his neck backwards. The head's jaw rolled as it chewed on something.
"It is. We've come to speak with him."
"What about?"
Gull frowned.
"That's between us and him."
"No, that's between you and me. You tell me what's about, and I'll mention it to him when I get around to it, and the longer you wait, the less important it is, I figure."
The head spoke rough Sunjin, and Harm had to concentrate to make sense of the thick accent.
"We wish to hire him as our taskmaster. We're pit fighters.
From Sunja."
"Course you're from Sunja. Free trained, are you?"
"No trouble to tell."
Mullock shared a "who is this punce?" frown with Harm, who wasn't feeling well at all about this. The encounter with the locals the night before, coupled with this bastard on the wall, were cutting a very clear picture of people living in this area.
"Please, pass on that message,"
Gold politely asked.
"When I get the chance,"
the head answered, still chewing. "Then we'll wait here.
Move on back a bit, over there in the grass. Don't piss on anything."
With an exasperated sigh, Gold turned to move.
"Course,"
the head continued,
"I might pass on that request a little faster if you toss me a coin."
"What?"
Gull snarled.
"A coin? What's the matter? You deaf? Or just stupid?"
Even Harm scowled at this topper above them. It was a young man, unshaven, with a shock of curly brown hair. He gripped the points of 2 logs with fingers that looked like fat sausages.
"I'm not paying you anything."
"Well then, that'll be 2 coins now."
Gull balked.
"You must think I'm an idiot."
"I do. I truly do. And be careful now.
any unpleasantness and the price goes up once more.
We'll wait, Gold told him.
You'll wait a long time, then.
You have to come out sometime.
Now, you stupid topper, the head sighed. You don't understand. I'll make it simple for you. You listening? Hey, cripple, you listening?
Gold's jaw clenched. Go on.
No. I asked you if you were listening. You answer me first, and then we'll go to the next bit.
The crippled Cree smiled then, as harsh as a gleam of steel, and Harm saw the restrained fury in his eyes. I'm listening.
Good. Try not to be so thick, eh?
At this, chuckles could be heard behind the closed gate.
Always heard you lot were stupid, eh? Stupid, but never believed it. I'm the sort where I have to see it, right? Have to see it.
Lads, he said to the men laughing behind the gate,
you should see this crippled bowl licker. He looks like he's ready to burn something. Hey, cripple,
he directed back at Goll.
Get happy there. It's 4 coins now.
Goll glanced at Harm, and the Jaiberian wanted nothing more than to strike that pile of shit on the wall. One of the head's hands stuck out from the wall, fingers flexing.
Toss them up here. The only way you'll see anyone here. Old Thymondas himself wants the coin. Told me to get it from you. Coin first, then we'll let you in.
Rubbing his face, Goll struggled with his purse and fished out 4 gold coins. He tossed the first one up at the head. It bounced off the wood, and the man made no attempt to catch it.
In my hand, you angry tit, in my hand! Toss it here!
Muluk walked over and picked up the gold piece. He was about to throw it up when the head spoke.
Ah, no, 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 that's not fair. The cripple tosses it. Come on, little man, toss it here. Pretend one of those sticks is up your ass.
Holding his temper, Gold tossed up all 4 coins, one after the other, while balancing himself on the crutches. Some attempts failed, but after a while the head grew bored with his sport and eventually made the effort to catch the gold.
That's good, cripple.
The head smiled in nasty fashion. He nodded to the men behind the gate. Sounds of a plank being removed and falling to the ground could be heard. The gate slowly opened inwards. Harm's gut sank. The brute standing right in the widening opening was none other than the shirtless giant from the night before, and the big man smiled at him. Chapter 23
Breed,
the giant hissed with evil delight. Half a dozen other men stood about, dressed in leather vests and capped off with ill-made cloth hats. All carried swords and spears, and none appeared particularly friendly. Some still chuckled in wicked amusement from the head's taunting of Goll.
Welcome, Breed,
the giant greeted and stepped aside, gesturing for them to enter. Goll lumbered in, heedless of the monster's recognition of Harm, and for that alone the Jaiberian wanted to throttle the Cree. Muluk followed him in, and Harm reluctantly brought up the rear, wary of the big man exuding hateful mirth. 2 men behind the gates pushed them closed, bringing the count of armed men to 10. Harm didn't like the odds in the least, and the presence of the great evil smiling brute before him made him feel terrible. 4 of the spearmen, with brazen smirks on their faces, blocked Goll from proceeding any further. Beyond their crossed spears stood a fine-looking house built on a knoll.
Ah!
The head called out, stepping down from the wall's rampart. He was dressed in fine pants and a grey shirt open from the neck down to his upper belly.
I'm afraid I misled you a bit. The price to get in here was 4 gold pieces. To see Thymondas will cost a bit more.
Goll scowled at him, the colour creeping up his neck like a furious rash.
Thymondas!
He roared. The smiles on the gathered men bled away. 2 of them even looked back to the well-made house facing the wharf and water. Other smaller houses were behind the wall, along with a barn and a smithy, all squatting well away from the prized house lording over them all. At the startling yell, people milling about with chores looked up.
Thymondas!
Goll repeated. The head's amusement disappeared, and he took 2 steps towards the Cree, but Muluk stopped him by blocking his path and staring into his face with a questioning glare. The spearmen about them tensed, and Harn placed his back to his two companions, his hand on his sword's pommel. Before him, the giant's smile didn't dim in the slightest. The man had even taken to punching meaty fists into alternating hands.
"He's heard you already, you stupid pants," the head said. "Dog balls. You'll wake up the whole town."
"What do you care?" Gaul asked.
"I don't, truth be known."
"Ah." From the house on the hill, two men emerged from a door and stood on a deck facing the wall. Harm inwardly groaned. The henchman with the grim look helped the bowed over frame of a much older man. Thymondas himself, the same saucy bastard who had ridiculed him the night before. The old taskmaster came into view dressed in a red robe of considerable worth.
"This will not end well,"
Harm spoke under his breath, catching Malak's ear.
"Is it him?"
"Aye that," Harm said wearily, "in the wasted flesh."
"I'll do the talking," Gaul insisted. Harm gestured, "Be my guest."
"Father," the giant called out, "the breed from last night is amongst these dogs."
The Dark One's face split into a murderous smile, while Thymondas steadied himself by grabbing on to the deck's railing. His unpleasant features screwed up and glowered down at them all. He swished his hand, unsteady for the moment it took, and the spearmen blocking the three moved aside. Gaul called out,
"Master Thymondas, I wish—"
"Shut up,"
Thymondas snarled, with all the fury from the previous night, squashing Harm's hope that he might have been drunk after all. To his regret, he could see that Thymondas, in his charming years, was a right vengeful old prick. One of the old taskmaster's hands stabbed in Harm's direction.
"You."
He seethed, his lips puckering up in hate.
"You piece of horse shite, miserable sack of maggot juice. I spit on you and any who claim you as family."
And he did, graphically summoning up curds of phlegm, but generating only a weak bauble of a dribble that stretched for a moment from his lower lip, before finally breaking away and falling to the ground. The sight and sound of it made Harm cringe. Even Gaul looked back at the Jiberian with a concerned expression, silently demanding a greater explanation when there was no time to tell.
"You there," Thymondas screamed out. "Cripple! What are you doing with this topper?"
Gaul closed his eyes as if in mortal agony and faced the taskmaster. "He travels with me and my other companion. We're gladiators."
"Pah!"
Thymondas jerked his hand in the air.
"You're not gladiators. Gladiators wouldn't be here talking to me while the games are on. Who are you? Unless, same and paddle my ass, unless you're free-trained shite. That's it, isn't it? You're free-trained rabble. Dog balls! Should have seen it earlier. Boys, thinking since they have a blade, they're men. I'll tell you what, cripple, you and your daisy friend there can leave now and don't look back. This fat breed and I have some unattended matters to finish. I said I'd find you, breed. But Simon, take me. I never figured you'd be knocking on my front door so early in the morning."
A rusty laugh left him, sounding like a woodsman taking a saw across a frayed tree trunk.
"Simon's black hanging fruit. We'll string you up nice and proper."
Thymondas cackled with wicked glee, clasping his claws together in anticipation.
"You can't have him," Gaul announced.
This drew the taskmaster's attention, and he took a moment to address the upstart.
"Watch me, cripple. There's no scars about. This is my land, and you stand upon it. You and anyone on it are my property in my eyes, as sickly as they are. Any thinking man here knows that."
"Then we'll fight you," Gaul stated. From where he stood, Harm felt a rush of admiration for the Cree. Even Malak was adamant in his pose. The Jiberian's fondness for the pair grew.
"Fight you!"
Thymondas exclaimed. His frame shook, and he leaned to one side. In alarm, the man near him reached out and steadied him. The rotten sounds erupting from Thymondas's one-toothed maw were foul to hear, forcing Harm to glance elsewhere. He saw the workers beyond the spearmen, men, women, and children, all poorly dressed, and knew in an instant that Thymondas probably was a self-proclaimed lord here in this wooded land. Worse, he might very well be a tyrant. "I'll fight," Harm shouted and drew his blade. "Him." He pointed his weapon at the giant. The big man eyed Harm's sword with interest, and cocked his head in a question towards the taskmaster.
"Nevin!"
Thymondas laughed so hard his breath came in short, dangerous gasps. Harm wished the man dead right there, but the ancient taskmaster recovered.
"What do you say, Nevin?"
Towering Nevin growled and bared surprisingly fine teeth, as he tensed his powerful-looking upper body, causing everything to bulge. Mullock cast an incredulous eye at the Jiberian, his meaning clear.
"You're dead."
"I wish to wager," Gol shouted, catching everyone's attention.
"Wager?"
Thymondas asked.
"Wager what?"
He put the question to the head.
"Didn't you get all their coin already?"
The head frowned and cast his eyes downward.
"You dolt!"
Thymondas fumed.
"What is it you wish to wager then, cripple? Entertain us."
"If we win, you will." Gol paused. Harm wanted to tell him then there was no way in Saemund's hell he was going to be trained by that shriveled ass. Gol continued. "You will release us, and pay us 100 gold coin. Thymondas leaned over the railing.
"Do you have 100 coin on you?"
"No."
"Then lick my ass, you brazen pup. 100 gold. You'll get your lives. And that's that. The fight's to the death as well, if you have the balls for it. There'll be no love tapping on my land."
Gold didn't back down. "To the death, then."
"I'll have that Medemian blade of yours soon enough, Breed,"
Thymondas said to Harm in a cracking voice. Harm bristled at the mention of his prized weapon, while Nevin brightened with desire.
"Nevin!"
The giant glanced about at the sound of the taskmaster's voice.
"Fetch something to pound the Breed's ass into the dirt."
With that, Nevin lumbered off. Harm saw the muscles flex in his powerful back.
"Make a ring right there,"
Thymondas croaked at his guards standing around.
"Keep it in the dirt. Easier to cover up when things get messy. Move back, cripple. You're blocking my view. My lads won't hurt you. Not yet."
Swinging along on his crutches, Gol got out of the way and stood to one side with Mullock. Harm wandered over to them with a sorry half-smile on his face.
"Now this is good," Harm said. "My thanks for making the fight to the death. Clears up matters."
"Can you take him?"
Gol asked, causing the Jiberian to frown at the question.
"You're not judging his chances by his size, are you?"
"I am,"
Gol said.
"You didn't do that for me."
"Well, you're... you."
Those words took a moment to sink in, and when they finally did, Harm frowned at the Cree. He then slapped his belly.
"Get ready,"
the Jiberian said as he backed into the center of the ring formed of guardsmen.
"For what?"
Gol asked, but got no reply. The people living behind Thymondas' wall gathered behind the spearmen, watching with anxious faces. Soon Nevin returned, flourishing a long shafted mace. He swung the weapon back and forth, from left hand to right, loosening up thick muscles as he entered the ring. Nevin's dusky features were lit up with wicked mirth. Harm's answering smile was tight-lipped and sly.
"Introductions all round," Thymondas shouted over their heads. "Welcome all to the games of Thymondas."
The spearmen yelled out their appreciation while Harm noted none of the people beyond shared it.
"Nevin of Sunjar,"
Nevin roared, and flung his arms wide. He turned around on the road, immersing himself in the guards' applause. Then it was Harm's turn. He held his sword overhead.
"Harm of Jiberia!"
Thymondas's face twisted up in thought.
"Giant."
Harm rushed the giant. Taken aback, Nevin retreated a step and lashed out with the mace, making the wind whistle from the force of the blow. Harm ducked under the swing, slashed at the man's bare washboard of a gut, and opened it up with a heavy spurt of red. Nevin's face blanched, and he buckled over, pressing a hand against his wound. An instant after Nevin bent over, Harm spun around and hacked the larger man's head clean off with one fell chop. The body and head crashed into the dirt. Nevin's corpse moved at the waist as if considering rising once more to fight, but then it wilted and became still. Harm inspected his work before gazing up at the old man watching from the deck. Thymundus clutched at his fine robe as if stabbed through the heart. Gold's jaw hung open, and when Harm locked gazes with him, the Cree's face broke out into a smile. Harm slapped his fat belly once more in an unspoken, "See?" The wail from Thymundus made everyone hearing that ghastly sound shudder in fright. Harm then remembered Nevin had once addressed the old man as father. He just killed the old man's son. He realized he felt more than fine about it. The old taskmaster held on to the railing as if to yank it up, and heave it across the road. He swore, hot and loud enough to scorch the very air about him. He clawed at the air, cross-cutting it with enough feeling to draw blood. After long seconds, he settled down and caught his breath. He eyed Harm with a glare black with hateful rage. "Tar-kul!" Thymondas breathed loud enough for all to hear. "Bring me that breed's head." With that, the man at his side made his way to the ring. Gold cleared his throat and called out to the old man. "Another wager?" "To Saemon's hell with your wager!" Harm held his sword out at arm's length, watching the gathered spearmen for any with balls enough to come forth and test him. They did not, preferring rather to wait for the next champion of the village. Tarkul came forth, pulling his broadsword out and swishing it before him, much like Nevin. The man wasn't smiling as the giant had been, but as he drew closer, Harm could see the family resemblance.
"To the death?" Harm asked. "I'm going to stab this up your hole, Jiberian."
"Come on, then.
Time's wasting.
Kill him, Tarkul. Avenge your brother."
Harm's brow knotted together just as Tarkul attacked, heaving his broadsword about him like a living hellion held by the tail. They exchanged a brief clashing of blades before spinning away from each other. Harm's expression was measured yet wary, but Tarkul's was sparkling hatred. He slashed, slashed, and lunged, his sword snapping out like arrow shot. Harm parried, parried, and whirled away as his foe shot by him. Overextended, Harm spun around, almost impossibly fast for a man of his size, and half lopped off the wrist of Tarkul's sword arm. With a grunt, both agonized and surprised, Tarkul dropped to his knees, his sword falling from a hand hanging by a thin, gushing sliver of flesh. Tarkul looked up, perhaps about to plead for mercy. Harm's Medemian blade flashed in an uppercut, splitting the man's jaw and face up the middle, and flinging his entire body backwards. It landed with a thud. His leg shivered once and became still. The Jiberian put his back to the corpse and regarded the deck of Thymundus.
"Any more, sons? You want me to kill?"
The taskmaster sputtered with venomous fury, his face purpling at the energy coursing through his frail frame. It took a few heartbeats, but the hateful blast of "Kill him!" finally pierced the air.
"Kill the breed! Someone kill that fat breed!"
The spearmen looked at each other first before the gladiator, for this was a gladiator before them, and that was all Harm needed. He killed two of them with short, well-placed slashes, opening up a throat to a surprised gurgle, and splitting a chest with a single violent note of a shriek. The Medemian's fine edge sliced through their leather shirts as if they were soft butter. Then a spear stabbed for his gut, but he parried it, went forward, and stabbed the wielder through the back when the man dropped his weapon and tried to flee. Seeing no danger from that quarter, Harm turned around and faced another spearman, who held his weapon before him while his eyes bulged with fright. Across the way, Mullock had brained two men with Nevin's mace, and was facing down a third. Gull had tripped the head, the same man that had taunted them from the wall and taken their coin, and speared him with a crutch. The wretch lay on the ground, grasping at his trousers crotch, which bloomed darkly. Gold took only a moment to line up his fallen opponent's throat, before smashing once more with a measured length of wood. The man at his feet went into violent spasms, slow in stopping.
Bad day? All round?
Harm smiled at the remaining spearmen.
Kill them!
Thymunda screamed still, falling to his knees and baying the words like a wounded hound.
Saemon, take me now if you don't kill them. Kill! Kill!
The spearman chose to fight. He jabbed his weapon at the Jiberian's chest. Harm caught the spear behind the steel's head, stepped forward, and thrust. The spearman shrieked, released the weapon, and sought to run. The Medemian blade sank into his ribs, splitting them apart and driving the man to the earth. With barely any effort, Harm rooted the blade free of the corpse and gazed around. There was no one else. The men who had surrounded them, the guards of the old taskmaster, were chopped down where they stood or tried to leave. His eyes met the drawn face of Mullock, who was holding Nevin's mace across his pelvis with two hands, and then the pensive features of Gol. From the deck above, a red-faced and nearly insane Thymundus squealed and thrashed and cried out for Hellions to rise up from Saemon's hell. He pleaded for the Dark to take his soul, which he would give up willingly, in exchange for killing the three he-bitches that had robbed him of his sons and men. Spittle flew. His finger slashed the air, seeking soft flesh, while his screeching continued, long and harsh. His strength finally left him as he sank to his knees, his words lost in a dying wheeze of frustration. It only truly ended when Harm climbed up onto the deck and drove his sword through the old man's throat. Chapter 24. They weren't really sure what to make of the villagers. Like beaten animals, the men, women, and children crowded around, staring at the dead bodies until one of the women spoke up and told some others to get the little ones back until the mess was cleaned up and the bodies buried. Gol watched them with a stoic face, wondering if he would have to use his crutch as a weapon once again. He and Mullock retreated to the house of the now-dead Thymundus and divided their attention between a resting Harm and the gathering crowd. The men stopped just under the deck and gazed up at the Jiberian. The sun stayed behind its tattered blanket of clouds, keeping its glare to itself.
Well, Gol announced, that was interesting.
Not as interesting as the next few moments.
Mullock glanced at the gathering villagers with a worried expression. Why that? Harm leaned over the railing and faced his companions. I'll sleep soundly this night. This lot had bad to their core. The old man in particular. Something wasn't right there. What's next? Gol balanced on his crutches and rubbed at an eye.
I really don't know. Give me a bit to think. This place looks good,
Mullock said. Grounds well kept. Nothing in ruins. Gol frowned. I'm wondering how well these men were liked. Those people over there aren't exactly cheering our names.
Not yet.
Harm's arm creaked out from where he rested on the railing and pointed a finger. A woman approached them, dressed in a brown and white dress that flowed all the way to her ankles. Her hair, long and dark, was tied back into a single ponytail, exposing her sun-browned features, which were plain but not unattractive. Harm recognized her as the barkeep from the tiny alehouse.
Who killed these men?
She stopped, with her hands at her sides. Behind her, the men of the village dragged the corpses into a pile, while another brought around a long wagon with two horses.
You didn't see what happened? Gol asked her.
I didn't. Just rose to this. And a bloody morning it is. So who's responsible?
Gol looked at Harm while Mullock pointed. Harm sighed wearily at being singled out.
Lads,
he muttered.
You?
The woman scowled.
I know you.
You're the one from last night.
Drank a pitcher.
I remember.
I suppose it isn't hard to remember a new face in this place.
No, it isn't.
Well then, you've had a busy morning. See, you got some revenge.
I did and...
I did.
Harm nodded slowly, weighing his words.
We're just wondering how the people will take to us now, seeing that we killed the lot of the guards around here.
Well, I can tell you they're happy with them being dead.
They are?
Yes.
This lot held us captive for the last 2 years. Threatened whole families. Didn't allow anyone to leave unless it was in the back of that wagon there. The same one being used to carry them off now. Gull regarded her curiously.
What, this?
Yes, they were pigs. Old Thymundus was never a kind sort. He came here only 5 years ago, perhaps, but even then he cheated the men working on his properties. The same men who built this house, that wall. Their payment was to be allowed to build their own homes inside the wall, under the protection of Lord Thymundus.
He was a lord, Gull asked.
In his own mind, he called himself a lord, demanded taxes, brought in men who were thieves and rapists. Those spearmen. The last 2 years, the village had shrunk from perhaps 150 people to a mere 100.
Why didn't you contact the constables in Sunja?
The street watch.
She shrugged.
We did. Nothing ever came of it, and no one returned. After the first attempt, everyone was rounded up right there where you killed the big one, Nevin. Thymundus cursed us all, and said if any tried to leave, he'd execute twice the number. But his mind was addled as well. We all knew that. Everyone knew it was rotting. He'd lash out at anyone, any time, and forget about it seconds later. So we've been living under the whim of a madman.
He remembered you,
Mullock said to Harm, to which the Jiberian faintly shrugged. The people aren't exactly rejoicing, Gull pointed out. She raised her chin and considered them all. Well, that's the meat of it now, isn't it? These people aren't warriors. We're all wondering who the new masters are. This mortified both Gull and Mullock, while Harm gawked at her. What's your name? He asked.
Midji.
Midji, you tell these people. We want nothing from them.
Ah, we might want the house.
Gull jumped in, flashing a cautious look at Harm. And the coin these bastards took from us. And half of anything we find inside the house.
But nothing else.
Harm cut off the Cree. Midji considered the three. I don't think anyone wants the house, except for the few possessions that Thymundus stole.
Why not?
Harm asked, sizing it up behind him. Solid build. People from this village were killed in that house.
And raped.
That took the pleasant look off Harm's face. Then we'll leave it as well, Gull said. What's done with it is up to you and all the rest. We won't lay any claim. Give us a few moments to search it, though. Midji nodded and went back to her people.
Saman's blue pisspot,
Mullock breathed, watching the woman walk away.
This man was a hellion bastard.
Bad all round, Harm agreed. Well, get on in there and take a look around, Gull ordered. I won't lie to you. I thought for a moment there we might have had our training grounds, but I won't train in this place. Bad all round. Maybe even cursed now.
Killed and raped,
Mullock said.
That's...
He couldn't finish. Harm studied the white corpse of the taskmaster, the face pointed towards the lake. With a grunt, he hooked his foot under the dead man's belly and heaved him off the deck. The body crumpled in a heap below, face down in the dirt and grass. Then the Jiberian hawked and spat upon the carcass.
That's what I think about that,
he said. In the ensuing silence, the three pit fighters regarded the people whom they had just unintentionally liberated. After a few moments, Gull somberly suggested they go through the house, and the others agreed. They searched the premises, finding several items of worth, but left it all, remembering and believing the valuables might have been stolen in the first place. A small oak chest opened with a key found on Thymundus's carcass, and they found close to 500 gold coins, tarnished and dark in the shadows of the house. Another small chest contained well over 100 silver. This, they decided, wasn't all theirs. Perhaps none of it. Nevertheless, Gull found 2 small cloth sacks and filled them with half the gold, but left the silver.
I'm not certain about this,
Harm said, getting an agreeing rumble from Mullock.
I am.
Gull tied off the sack. This coin is ours. Don't worry. They'll be happy enough with what's left, especially with the old prick gone. The rest of the coin they can divide amongst themselves. Harm and Mullock still appeared uncomfortable.
Look.
Gull turned to Midji, another woman, and 3 men who waited just outside the door. Midji, we found a large sum of money here. Most of it is probably yours. We've claimed a little less than half, and the rest, along with anything else of worth which probably was taken from you, is here. But if you truly feel it's all yours... Gol held out the heavy sack with one arm. The villagers shook their heads.
You keep that,
Midgie said, causing Gol to glance at his companions with a knowing look.
Coin well spent to be free of the bastards.
As for the things in the house, we'll go through it and take back what's ours. She studied the house for a moment.
We'll burn the rest.
We'll take our leave then, Gol said quietly.
Where are you going? Midgie asked.
Sunja, you can't walk that distance. We have a coach waiting.
Your pardon, one of the men spoke up, but that coach is gone.
Gol blinked, handed the sack to Mullock, and swung himself out into the sun. He arched his head up and winced.
Past noon.
But we have horses you can have,
the villager told him.
Thymundus owned the horses,
Midgie added. Down the lane there's a stable.
I'm the stable hand,
said another man, dressed in a worn shirt and trousers and with a black bandana around his grey head.
If you want them, I'll have them for you.
Harm unconsciously met the gaze of Midgie, who didn't avert her eyes. The Jiberian smiled at her, suddenly careful not to bare his ill-kept teeth.
Do you have a wagon? Gol asked.
We do, the stable hand said.
Not leaving you in a bad spot, are we?
Mullock asked. The man scratched at his bandana before he hiked it up over his forehead. The word punts was spelled out in scar tissue. It started from his right temple, below the hairline, before stretching across in horrific fashion to touch the other side.
Tarkel and four of his lads did this to me. Never did find out exactly why. And I'm fortunate, as there's others who got worse. Eyes gouged out, fingers chopped off. You sons aren't leaving us.
The stable hand's eyes watered up suddenly. His mouth clamped shut, and all became very still, the air charged with emotion. His companions placed hands on his slumped shoulders, comforting him. Gol averted his eyes.
Not leaving us in a bad spot,
the stable hand finally got out.
Not in the least.
He wiped at his face.
You've delivered us from one. In fact,
the stable hand sniffed hard then, clearing his flooded sinuses and smiled gratefully. Chapter 25 The house of Thymundus burned as if a star itself had dropped out of the heavens and crashed upon its roof. Harm raised a mug of beer and took a deep pull of it. Putting the taskmaster down had been just the stroke of good fortune he needed out of the arena. The death of Thymundus and his sons, including the pack of dogs they had collected to keep Karashipa in line, seemed to transform the villagers. No longer did they wear long, emotionless faces, but were actually smiling. Upon recognizing Harm, several made it a point to come up to the Jiberian and thank him for killing their demented overlord. They even thanked Gol and Mullock, and that night, after the bodies of the dead had been placed inside Thymundus's looted house, and the valuables and remaining money returned to their rightful owners, the town had a public feast near the water's shore, butchering and roasting four pigs and countless chickens. It was perhaps the best meal in a very, very long time for Harm. Ale, dark beer, and wine were served then, and Midgie's alehouse became a place to visit after the food near the lake's edge. Most people piled inside the palisade to watch the torching of the house, but Harm remained behind. He could see the glow of the highest flames perfectly from the deck of the alehouse. The wild spiraling of glowing embers rode currents of smoke to the heavens. When he heard the door squeak behind him, his hopes spiked. Midgie appeared alongside him with mug in hand. Harm glanced at her and nodded, holding out his own mug. She tapped it, and they both drank, later watching the distant blaze.
All this wine and such?
Harm asked. Won't it break you?
It's a lot to give up freely.
It's just enough.
Midgie looked into his eyes.
And nothing breaks me.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Midgie became quiet then.
I was almost raped by that old bastard.
Harm Winston took in her profile. She wasn't a beauty, but she wasn't hard to look upon either. In fact, the more he saw of her, the more he liked.
I'm sorry.
Midgie shrugged. Happened 2 years ago. I'm glad he's dead,
and I'm very happy to celebrate the death of them all. I'm right happy to celebrate with you.
Do you always go around shirtless?
Midgey asked.
Ah, yes, almost always.
I see. You have something wrong with your lip?
Harm blinked at her.
She had picked up on that. He chuckled then, baring his terrible mess of a mouth.
Your teeth are bad,
she said with a frown, but otherwise you're not too hard to look upon.
Any wife to speak of?
Harm glanced to the glow of fire.
No, no wife. No children. Too old for all that.
Harsh shite.
Well, all right. No interest in any of that. You're not a daisy, are you?
That made him sputter in his beer.
No, lords, no. Not that I have anything against...
He shrugged.
Only asking.
You seem quite interested.
Maybe I am.
Looking to get married?
To the right one.
Like us all.
Maybe even raise a family?
That made the Jiberian wince yet again. I have no desire for children.
None?
Harm shook his head. Much rather bash heads in the pit.
Where are you from again?
Jiberia.
Are all Jiberians like you?
No. Just me. And he smiled. Midgey smiled back. Harm saw that her teeth were fair and clean, but she was missing her right incisor. She raised a hand to her ponytail and gave it a long, sensual stroke before directing her attention back to the fire.
Can you do anything else besides fight in the pit?
She asked.
Like rutting?
Midgey chuckled then, the sound quite pleasant to Harm's battered ears and relieving. He was glad he'd made her laugh, yet scolded himself for being so bold. Only a moment ago, she had told him she'd almost been raped, and here he was making jokes. He wouldn't blame her in the least if she'd slapped, scolded, or outright left him for such a slight. Such brazen comments were usually reserved for the serving maids or prostitutes he bought for a night's pleasure. Looking at this dark-haired woman beside him, he had to remind him she was neither, and he didn't want to chance offending her, not after catching her eye.
Not rutting,
she said. My apologies for that.
Very bad of me.
Midgey looked at the fire.
Can you hammer a nail? Or farm?
Harm sighed. No and no. No interest.
Nothing at all?
Nothing like that.
My apologies.
You apologize a bit. Harm caught himself on the verge of doing it once more.
So what can you do besides apologize and fight?
That I can do and enjoy. Not much else, however. She took another mouthful of beer.
I'd been to Sanja 3 times before that topper stopped any of us from leaving the area. Every time, I longed to get back here. It might not seem like much, but I grew up here. I enjoy these walls of trees much better than those of the city.
Harm decided not to ask her about her parents.
Now it's getting on time for me to think about getting married.
She regarded him again, her hazel eyes holding his attention.
Isn't it the man that asks the woman?
Harm frowned. Sanjan culture wasn't all that different from Jiberia.
I'll ask if I feel like it.
She was softly defiant.
Does that worry you?
Oh, no. Dare say I should thank you for the warning.
Dare say you should.
They shared a light chuckle then, and turned their attention back to the fire. Someone kicked Pignot where he lay sleeping, jarring him awake to the irregular wheeze and rumble of surrounding snores. He sat up against the wall and wiped his face with a dirty palm, glimpsing the moving shadows of 3 men becoming indistinct and merging with the gloom. They offered no apologies and trundled along as if on an open street, talking in loud voices and uncaring about the many sleepers covering the floor. One even carried a large cloth sack. Pignot frowned and rubbed his face in recognition. The sack looked like Harm's. The sight of it got him to his feet. He felt his stomach grumble at him, and even a pang of nausea from a distinct lack of food. The Sanjan had spent the day staying low and conserving his energy, hoping that his companions would return. He had no coin for food, and the few bites Bindan had given him were consumed quickly. But the fountain did sate his thirst. Twice during the day, he'd asked the media if there were any fighters unable to battle their opponents, seeking to fill the position. There weren't, however, and Pignot had remained in the pit, listening to men just a few feet away eat bread and fruit, smacking their lips in unnecessary fashion. Sleep was a welcomed escape. But this morning was different. Or was it still night? It was difficult to determine below the arena. Noting the lack of activity, he decided it was some time before dawn. Pignot recalled the sack, bouncing just a little, slung over a shoulder. He was certain it belonged to Harm. He knew it, and a topper had taken it. And before he knew what he was doing, he got to his feet and followed. The air was warm and ripe with bad breath and seeping gas, and Pignot stepped over legs and arms as if they were pitfalls. Snores ripped the stillness. Eventually, Pignot spotted his quarry walking up the stairs to the outside. He hurried towards the stairs, the torchlight in nearby sconces burning low and deepening the foul shadows. When he reached the base, the men were lost in the dark above. A scowl twisting his face, Pignot climbed. When he emerged outside, it was under 1,000 stars, twinkling behind cottony wisps of smoke, lighting up the dark ceiling of the world. Pignot stood and took a deep breath, savoring the city's breath over the stale stink of the air below. The three men trudged away from the gate of the moon and melted into the semi-dark of a street. Pignot followed, not knowing in the least what he might do, only that his friend's possessions were being stolen. How long had Harm left them there? He allowed he'd probably do the same if the thing was just lying about and unclaimed for a few days, but the Jiberian was alive, and he'd need that sack of shite for his next match. He wasn't about to let some pit fighter claim it as his own. The thought of a fellow Sunjan stealing something from a visitor to the country galled him as well. The streets were near empty, the few people either heading home or visiting the alehouses and taverns with their warm, glowing windows. Laughter rolled across the way. Pignot knew this area, knew it rarely slept, but rather exhausted itself. Many a night he'd frequented this particular strip as it was crammed on both sides with places to spend coin on drink and women. A group of drinkers spilled into the street, raucous and stumbling, blocking his view. He sped up, stealing quick checks over the drunkards' heads as he navigated his way through them. The three men turned and headed down an alley. Pignot cut through the crowd and sped up until he reached the mouth of the back street. He took a cautious peek before slipping around the corner. His boots shuffled along fitted stones, their surfaces draped in shadows and pressing in on the few hollows of dying lantern light. The three men were halfway through, silhouettes against the night.
"You three!"
Pignot called out, making himself heard over the din of the nearby drinking establishments.
"That's my friend's property you have there."
The three stopped in their tracks, heads turned around.
"There's a leather sleeve for the arm, greaves, and a pointy brass helm."
"What if there is?" one of the heads asked.
"It's not yours."
"Curious," a different voice said.
"I have exactly what you say right here, but your friend left it in the dark, never came back. I don't think he wants it anymore."
The three shades split apart.
"He wants it,"
Pignot declared, moving closer. A corner of light illuminated him for a brief moment as he passed through it. Thoughtful silence at that, brimmed by the muted merriment of the night's drinkers.
"Perhaps you want to try and take it,"
came the challenge, sounding as if it were sheathed in a smile.
"Try,"
Pignot growled, getting closer to the three.
"You don't know me."
No sooner did that final syllable leave his lips than all four men lunged for each other, to the clatter of a dropped sack and drunken laughter in the night. Leathery hands gripped and sought to take down Pignot. A fist flashed off his brow, snapping his face to the left. He returned the punch with one of his own, connecting and making a man gag. Two shadows clung to him. One snaked a leg around his own, and all three men dropped into a pool of darkness. Hands groped on Pignot's thighs, while another set clamped down on his throat. Grunts and hisses stabbed the air. Pignot kicked out, hitting something solid and driving it back from his legs. He wrapped his forearm over the paws on his throat and jerked them to the right, twisting underneath his attacker's weight. The man fell forward, releasing his hold before his face crashed into the fitted stones of the alley floor. Pignot untangled himself and rose, kicking the scrambling figures at his feet. A man charged into him from the side like a swung maul, driving him into a hard wall. Pignot looked down as his attacker's head swept up, cracking off his jaw and bouncing his head off hard timbers. He saw stars and wondered for a split second if they belonged to the night. Two fists thundered into his gut, tenderizing the muscle there and making him breathless. The Sunjin punched an elbow into his attacker's back, forcing him to his knees with a grunt of pain. Fingers flashed out of the gloom and mashed Pignot's face. He half-blocked a punch with a flick of his arm. The hand on his face clawed, ripping open the stitches there with sinewy snags. Pignot roared. The shadow snarled back. A fist flew out of the dark and Pignot ducked, hearing the crinkle of knuckles breaking against solid wood. He cut loose with three quick blows that buckled the man over with pained huffs. Pignot reached down and felt hair, gripped scalp, and cocked back a knee, intending to drive a nose out the back of a head. A fist cracked across his face, breaking his own beak with a startling pop of pain and sound, causing him to yank free a small mat of hair. Another fist hammered his face before two more axed into his stomach. Instinct taking over, a grimacing Pignot rammed an open palm into a face, feeling a nose shatter, giving back what he received. The man staggered back, cupping his features and hissing in pain and rage. Pignot charged, but was nearly taken off his feet by a solid shadow and punched twice before being whirled about and slammed against the opposite wall of the alley. A hand gripped the Sunjin's shoulder, but he twisted under it and smashed a crotch. The owner collapsed with the barest oof. Pignot straightened, and something else came at him. The knight erupted with the brazen smack of flesh on flesh as he blocked three quick punches before stepping outside the man's swing and driving his fist over a thick shoulder. Hard knuckles cracked off a chin, toppling the shadow. Fighting to draw air into his lungs, Pignot backed up until lantern light found him. Something rasped against the cut stones of the alley, and a pair of arms lashed around Pignot's legs, bringing him down. A man crawled over him, hammering fists into the Sunjin's body and drawing grunts of pain. The attacker pinned Pignot's arm under a knee and mashed an elbow down across the Sunjin's skull. Then a furious pummeling of elbows erupted from the man on top, every blow as hard as the stone beneath Pignot's back. Skin swelled and split, blood spurted. His head bounced off the stone. Wheezing, Pignot's open palm flashed up and crunched into the foe's jaw, lifting him up with enough force to make his spine bend. Pignot freed his trapped arm and grabbed his attacker's chin. He held him at arm's length a second before unleashing punishing strikes into a purpling face, releasing the unconscious man on the final blow. Pignot rolled the boneless figure off and used a wall to force himself to his feet. Something barreled through the darkness, and he twisted out of the way, allowing the wall to flatten a face. Pignot kicked the stunned man in the gut twice, whipping his boot up from the road and into a buckled midsection. The smashed lout collapsed outside the circle of lantern light. Panting, Pignot whirled to the left, then the right, misstepped, and caught himself against a wall. In between gasps, he listened. Laughter, distant and taunting. Moans at his feet. Something hissing as if a throat had been cut. Pignot put a hand to his face and felt the ugly blooms of swelling. Blood slathered his hand. Then a light shone his way. An old man stood in a doorway, holding a lantern aloft and blinking at the fright Pignot knew he'd become. The old stranger shivered, beard twitching in horror, his evening robes dark and kept closed with a rope belt at his waist, heads poked up around his hips, pale, fat faces. Children.
Close the door,
Pignot rasped. Finding his courage, the grandfather hurriedly backed in, pressing a hand into the faces of his young ones so that they wouldn't see the things in the alley. A moment later, the door shut, and Pignot was once again swallowed by the dark. He staggered across the men on the road. A hand clutched at his ankle. Pignot twisted around and stomped on the joint before punishing the owner with several kicks to the body. He stepped away from the now rubbery grip. Someone moaned, and Pignot was only half sure it wasn't him. He found Harm's sack and, straightening up, frame heaving, and painfully hung the thing over a shoulder. Standing amongst bodies writhing as if they'd been gutted, Pignot glared. He turned this way and that, waiting for one of them to rise and stop him. They did not. He tongue-checked all of his teeth as he staggered from the alley, tasting blood. He spat. With the sack over his shoulder, Pignot walked away very slowly, unsteadily at times, back towards the pit. Somewhere during that walk, shadows surrounded him, called to him as if they were standing on some faraway shore. He heard them, but didn't answer. And when his knees buckled and he collapsed to the road, they rushed in. Chapter 26. Light blazed through his personal darkness so strongly that when Pignot opened his eyes, he first thought he was dead. As it turned out, he wasn't. He was on his back with his face pointed towards an open window. He turned away from the light, grimacing at the tightness in his neck, and gazed up at the familiar sight of bare timbers comprising the ceiling. With a groan, he touched his head. Stitches. More stitches. His fingers felt more harsh seams amongst the knobs of his face. By the hair of Seaman's black crack, he was thankful he was unconscious when those went in. He pulled himself into a sitting position and blinked at the cot he lay upon. Three other cots filled the room. Three open windows.
Benden?
He whispered. There was no doubt he was back at the healer's house, but he was puzzled as to how he'd gotten there. Just at the foot of the cot was the cloth sack holding Hans' possessions, but he had no recollection of what had happened.
Benden?
He asked, louder this time, and directing it at the open stairway. A metallic clunk came from below, heavy and ominous-sounding and frightful enough to startle Pignot. It hit the bottom step, paused as if gathering strength, and then proceeded upwards, becoming louder, closer. Wood squealed under a tremendous weight. The approaching noise drew Pignot's gaze to the stairs, and he grew increasingly anxious. He noted the surgical tools on the table next to the window. Several sharp-looking knives and even a hand axe lay there. The footsteps became louder. The wood yelped. Pignot again considered the table and the assembled cutting instruments. Then a helm rose in the stairwell, the back of one, and even as Pignot watched, the figure paused upon hitting the landing before slowly turning around to address the next flight of stairs. A full visor covered the helmet, which was sunken in design. Pignot scowled. It was military. Worse. It was the helm of a Sujin. The Scars were the lighter infantry, tasked with defending the city and, to some extent, policing the streets along with the constables. But the Sujins were not. They were the frontline assault troops of Sunja, the heavy foot, comprised of men from every walk of life, even killers and criminals who, if one believed the stories, were once imprisoned and given the choice to join or perish within their cells. Most Sujins served along the front, deployed in strength and warring with invading Nordun, whose own forces seemed to have no end. And here was one, walking up the stairs towards him. Like a nightmare of metal, flesh and bone, the soldier grew with each step he took. The lowered visor hid the man's features, allowing only the black pits of his eyes to glint in the light. A heavy chainmail shirt with iron plates lashed to his frame gleamed, and the pommel of the Sujin short sword seeped into view. Daggers in scabbards lined the soldier's waist like a short fence. Pignot looked at the knives on the table and knew nothing there could penetrate this thing coming up the steps. And the hellion still grew with each step, matching the rising unease in Pignot's breast. Another figure came up the steps behind this slow-moving mountain, but the Sujin didn't allow him to dwell on whoever it was. When the soldier reached the top step, the crest of his helm bumped into a beam Pignot had believed out of reach. Perhaps it still was, to him, not to the monster now occupying the upstairs room with him. Pignot took a breath and didn't take his eyes off the warrior. If he really needed it, the window would be a last attempt at escape. That thought made him uncomfortable, for all manner of bad things might happen on the day a pig flies. The Sujin stepped away from the steps, stooping over slightly to allow the second man to come into the room. Pignot recognized him but couldn't recall the name. He was perhaps in his early 40s or late 30s, dark of complexion, as if he'd fallen asleep in a forge when he was a child. Flecks of harsh grey coloured his temples, and lines were scratched out beneath his eyes. Evil-looking eyes, as sharp as the edge of a blade and every bit as cold. He wore grey trousers, rough spun cloth, and a blue shirt that hung off a muscular frame. Like the Sujin, he wore a sword at his waist.
"We meet again."
The man smiled thinly. "Seems so," Pignot agreed, wary of this stranger and still not certain about the massive Sujin in the room.
"He a friend?"
"Yes, you can say that."
"What's your name again?"
"Toffer."
"And you're Pignot?"
"Interesting name."
"Oh, I'm interesting, all right."
Toffer moved to one of the beds, deemed it to be worthy, and sat down. He folded his hands and stared hard at the Sunjin.
"You got into another fight last night. The second one in almost as many nights."
Pignot frowned. "What do you know about it?"
"I saw the first one where you took on a handful of gladiators.
Not free-trained either. Those were groomed war pigs, if I ever came across any. And you put them down.
While pissed, no less.
All I wanted then was a place to drink. And they didn't want you there.
I understand both sides.
But when they sought to punish you for it, by Seddon's ballsack, you gave back."
"They were probably just as drunk," Pignot thought, but he didn't voice his opinion.
"You are indeed a scrappy one,"
Toffer chuckled in admiration.
"I like that. You've run up a bill with my friend Bindan this day. We both wondered how you'll be able to pay. You managed the first instance, but I suspect this time will be different."
"I'll pay him. I already did."
Pignot straightened on his cot. He didn't like that in the least. Owing debts to friends, merchants, and even healers was one thing. The feeling he had about owing coin to Toffer wasn't something he was sure he could sleep easy over.
"Yes,"
Toffer explained.
"You owe me now, and I do require payment. My friend here,"
he tilted his head to the brooding Sujin, "needs coin as well. In case you don't already know, you were a mess last night. You're a sewn-up mess this morning.
We carried you here, me and a few others.
I thought that one of your nature would appreciate the gesture, especially when you left those three men in the alley last night."
Pignot started, but Toffer kept on.
"I also know those three lads aren't particularly happy with you. Probably searching for you right now, in fact. You were half right in fighting them in a dark alleyway, but you probably should have stayed away from the light."
Toffer traced a finger around his jaw.
"My guess is they saw your face. In any case, anyone who looks upon you now, well, you're memorable. Let's leave it at that."
"What do you want?"
"My coin, of course.
I don't have any."
"You have that sack at your feet,"
Toffer pointed out. Pignot fumed.
"That's a friend's.
Not mine to give."
"I understand. Well, that means you must pay me. Pay us."
Another dip of the head to the menacing hellpup, standing to one side. "And I wish to be paid soon and in full." Pignot glanced to the window once more. Truthfully, he felt terrible, but it might indeed be time to bolt.
"Said I don't have any."
"Well, what do you have of worth?" Toffer peered at him down the length of his nose.
"Nothing." "Ah, but you're wrong,"
Toffer hissed. "A man who can hold his own against a handful of house pit fighters isn't nothing, in my eyes.
I'm interested in your skills, young man. Those are invaluable. I want those."
What was this Toffer speaking about? Pignot's expression shifted into dark confusion.
"You fight in the games this season,"
Toffer said, as though suppressing bad air. "Your first fight was a terrible mess. I won coin off you, but you were shite, honestly."
"My thanks,"
Pignot said sardonically. "What I saw in the streets, however, changed my mind about you. You're a killer, an animal, one of Saemon's hellions unleashed when riled."
"And I smell opportunity."
"Like what?" Toffer's eyes bored into Pignot.
"Not the most intelligent, it seems."
Pignot didn't like that.
"I can tell you're the smart one around here."
"Really? How's that?" "If you were alone right now, I'd toss your ass-licking carcass right out that window." Toffer's expression soured.
"You think I need him?"
"I do. You had a few other lads with you in the pool, I remember.
Strength in numbers, right?
That's right.
The Sujin's baleful gaze seemed to intensify, or perhaps it was Pignot's growing nervousness. Toffer spoke.
Well, you know I have the numbers. You also know I have at least one Sujin with me. But honestly, when you have one such as Clytus here, well, you don't really need many more.
Pignot conceded.
Well, here's my offer. I'll get you a fight in the pit. I can do that. Even if your match isn't until later, I can move it up. You win that fight. You fight like you did on the streets there. Win, and you'll repay me.
That sounded easy enough. But Pignot had to ask, and if I don't fight, and perhaps pay you later?
There is no later,
Toffer said curtly. There's no refusal.
If you breathe the words, Clytus will convince you otherwise. And if he's convincing you, the longer he takes, the less interested I'll be in having you fight, because you'll have all of your fingers broken, probably some ribs, your jaw, and anything else he can snap. Of course, I just might heave you into the pit with your wounds anyway and let the dogs devour you. The choice is yours.
Give me a moment. Toffer smiled. You have one moment. Clytus. Upon hearing his name, the armored Sujin animated with a rustling of mail links and took a heavy step forward, arms dangling at his sides and fists clenching. Pignot inwardly winced. The Sujin grabbed the end of the cot and lifted it with a creak. One of the warrior's huge hands reached for Pignot's head.
I'll do it!
Pignot blurted, and the hand stopped. The helm turned in the direction of Toffer.
Excellent,
the other man said. That wasn't so bad after all. Clytus released the cot, allowing it to crash to the floor and making Pignot shudder with the impact. The Sujin backed up to the steps once more, moving as if his limbs were controlled by unseen strings. Pignot felt something snap beneath him and believed he sank a little lower in the straw.
Now then,
Toffer said,
business. You rest here for the day. Relax. Heal. I'll make the arrangements. We'll try to get you into a fight tomorrow, perhaps, or the day after. I've left another coin with Binden, so you'll have